Welcome to Fit to Be Real.
And a little extra.
Please stay tuned and listen to how uncomfortable Carly is for the next, who knows, 45, 50 minutes. We're talking about death today.
Yes, and that makes me very uncomfortable. Don't like it. Don't like to talk about it. Don't like to think about it.
Luckily, we're not doing this alone. We have a BSN, an RN, a 200-hour yoga teacher, a death doula, and so many other things.
So many other things.
With us today.
With us today.
We are. That's good. Mm-hmm. I might kill you. Then we'll really have to talk about death. Let's get into it. I'm Victoria.
Hey guys, I'm Carly.
And who do we have with us?
I'm Bridget.
That was good.
That was really good.
And we didn't even have to do that again.
But Bridget Claus, we talk about Bridget a lot.
We do. We call her, if you don't know Bridget Clausen, you know who B. Claus is.
B. Claus.
We mention and reference her a lot. We've known her growing up at our mom's dance studio since she was a little kid.
I always forget.
Did I ever teach you?
No.
Did Justin?
No.
No, none of us did.
No, I just had Kristen, and when I was little, it was like Miss Beth.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Mom and Christy.
You had Christy? Yeah. Okay. I don't think we ever taught you, but she grew up at the dance studio and we've known her since she was little. And now she's like a professional in the real world and we are going to pick her brain.
And she taught yoga for us.
She taught yoga for us. She was what introduced us to yoga.
Oh my God. We would be, I don't know if you remember. You do. It's sad. So it's so funny now how things have turned, but I would be in the back like making jokes.
During yoga?
Cracking jokes during yoga, being like, oh, this is so hard.
So you were me.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And she's like, haha, that's nice. We keep our voices inside. She never said that. But
you knew she was thinking it.
Yeah. It's just funny how it turned out. And you're the one who I talked to about when I wanted to get trained. And I was like, what avenues do I look for? It's just, you know, the world is funny. It's a funny place.
And now
life
I look
works.
At you and I'm like, wow, that's so weird.
It's so weird.
I look at her and say, wow, you're so weird too.
Same. But no, she was in yoga with me last night and I actually thought about it. I forget what part, but I was like, huh, how about it?
Crazy how the world really works. Yeah. So can you explain, Victoria, what we are talking about today specifically? Because there's so much that we could talk about with Bridget. But what are we specifically talking about with her today?
Death.
Death. Death. Death. Death. Why? Why?
Because you're uncomfortable with it, and I actually think you're the majority. I think it's not something people are okay with to a certain degree in any regard. And I feel like there's so many aspects of death. We just think it's like final. But I feel like there's so many aspects of it that we don't really think about because we just feel loss and grief and all the things. So Bridget is a death doula.
Yeah.
What is that?
It's not really like a specific like definition. Like I did a death doula training. Think like birth doula helps the mom give birth, whether it's through different avenues. You know, it could be, you know, giving them support during, before, after. It could be helping them push. It could be advocating for them for the doctors. Death doula, similarly, depending on people's backgrounds, the woman that I trained under was a lawyer, so came at it from like a legal perspective. So it was really helpful with finances and funeral planning and different pieces like that. I'm from a medical background, so I know a lot about the medications, the dying process, what things look like. I know a little bit about a lot of things.
I know a little bit. I feel that way.
No.
Yeah. No, I'm the opposite. I know a lot about one thing and nothing about...
Bravo. I'm just kidding.
Anyway, you know a little bit about a lot of things.
Yeah. And you just listen to people is honestly the biggest part of being a death doula and figuring out what they need and figuring out whether you need to find somebody to help them with that or whether you can help them with that yourself. But kind of having a person through one of the craziest, darkest, like whatever's going on periods of your life or your loved one's life, just having a person that you can like bounce things off of is kind of how I feel about it.
So then are you talking about with the person who is going through like about to have the death process or the family members?
Both.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Bridget, how come I didn't know you did this?
Because I don't really do it yet. Like I have the training. I have a lot of trainings and I have a lot of things, but I kind of just incorporate it into like my life instead of using it as a business at this point.
So when I had Melody and Melody destroyed me in childbirth,
Okay.
I looked up in my hospital room and who walks in at 3 a.m. in the morning?
Oh my gosh.
But Bridget Clausen.
I forgot.
And I was half dead. Looking at Bridget, and she's like, I just bathed Melody. She had her first bath. And I was like, wait, was it Melody?
Yeah.
It was Melody, right? Yeah.
Melody and then Dean.
Dean. I think it wasn't Lewis. Yeah, you did Melody and you bathed Dean. So yeah. Bridget gave my kids their first bath in the hospital.
Totally forgot about that.
And I was like, thanks, Bridge. Like, it's so wonderful when you are in that place to look up and see a friendly face and be like, I took care of your baby. And I was like, oh my God, there's Bridget. Where'd she come from?
It's the opposite of what she just told us she does.
I know, but that's what I'm saying. She was, you did work in the hospital in the birthing unit.
So I like to say, and I took this from a writer, Amy Wright Glenn, who wrote a book kind of about, she's a chaplain and a birth doula and different things, but I work in birth, breath, and death. I started in maternity. I worked all there through school and a year after I graduated. I did pediatric cardiac ICU for 6 years and hopefully going back there at some point. I've done hospice. I've done primary care. I've done home care where I've taken like kids to like special needs preschool. I've done pretty much everything along the lifespan.
What is your favorite?
I think the cardiac ICU is my favorite. I'm currently working in a hospice. I don't know. Because I really just like learning about people and learning different things. Like every job I've had, I've learned a ton about, you know, taking care of people. So I think I just like to learn and I like to be able to help and I like to take something from every job I've had and kind of incorporate it not just into my work, which I care so much about, but also into like my family and friends and kind of helping everybody with whatever's going on.
Have you ever seen Justin in the hospital setting?
I was going to ask a legitimate question.
No, but he did work at CHOP. He was on a different floor than I was. Mm-hmm. But
exactly. We've never actually seen him do any of those things. We've heard tell. So I just wanted to make sure. I just wanted to clarify. Yeah. You've never seen him in a hospital setting. Good. Okay. Moving on. You can ask a legitimate question now.
You can only speak if you're holding the speaking glasses. So take them back. Give them to me. So you take a little bit of everything that you've learned and you put it in whatever, I don't even know what you would call areas of the hospital.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Of like nursing. It's all nursing. Yeah. So with that, do you find like, you have to, I don't know how to like wipe it all off at the end of the day, like especially when you're working with hospice and like little kids going through it.
Yes, and I'm not very good at it.
Oh!
So
what? Wait, what?
That's like a great idea in theory. And when you sent me that question earlier, I was like, that's a great idea. That's
you're like, I should do that.
Well, I only asked because we also know a yoga teacher, hospice nurse, and she is the one when I was going through like so many different people and so many different energies at the same time, not knowing why I was being affected by it. She told me how to kind of like truly wipe it off of my body and try to mentally offset the day so that I could be at home for the rest of the night by myself, like with myself, not with anybody else's problems. When you're dealing with death and grief, even if it's not, you know, grief connected to death, grief connected to any type of hospital stay, right? At any age. I give nurses so much credit because you have to wake up and go back and do it again. So if you're not good at it, which I'm not good at it.
Bridget clearly says she is not either.
How do you get through the day to day? I love that you're figuring it out right now.
No, but sometimes
it's so real.
Sometimes you don't get through it you just go do it day to day and it brings you down.
It's interesting because one of my friends who went to school in New York, musical theater, like is an actor, and she at one point was like, nurses are really good actors because you simply just have to go in and like do it. No matter what you just came from, no matter what you're going to, like you still have this, you know, shift or these visits or these things where you just have to go take care of the patient. So I don't know if it's some sort of like mental block that happens, but it's just like you just kind of go in and do it. And then the real challenge is I can do the 12-hour shift or I can do the 8-hour shift or whatever is the going home and the taking care of myself outside of it, whether that's therapy, whether that's CFIT, whether that's walking, whether that's sometimes just having a day where I just sit there and do straight up nothing and stare at a wall. Like, it just finding that balance of like, okay, this is a really like emotionally, physically taxing career path, and knowing that like, if you don't take care of yourself, and I've also been in those situations where I don't take care of myself, like things can go downhill very quickly.
Yes.
So it's kind of fine, constantly searching for that.
Wait, so are you telling us, Carly, that you do therapy?
Yeah. I love therapy.
How about it?
Guys, listen.
How about it?
I love therapy. I love it. I do it every Tuesday at 9 o'clock. I go to therapy.
You're not holding the glasses. Shush. So wait, let's bring it back, because this is fascinating. You're in hospice right now.
Yes.
But you're in an administrative managerial position,
yes.
Correct?
Okay. Yep.
So then you're not, are you with like patients or are you with the nurses?
I have been, because we've been very short staffed.
Okay.
And I'm with the nurses. So generally. And this is my first time in a managerial position. And I'm really glad that I took it. I also am like, I like patient care.
Yeah. You so like to be with people.
I like to be with the patients. So that's something that I learned. Yeah.
Even at the end of their life, you mm-hmm. are okay with being next to somebody who's about to die.
Death is not the worst thing in the world.
It's not? Tell
it's
us about
not
it.
The worst thing in the world.
Tell.
At all. I think one of the, so kind of, okay, so quick, how I got into
yes, tell
death
us.
Is, number one, I grew up with my father, who's my favorite person on the planet. He grew up quoting A Christmas Carol, and he's like, you know, we've all got to die, Cratchit, which is like,
yeah,
just such a simple phrase. I can just picture him saying it like my whole life growing up. So it's never been something that in my house that's been like super feared mm-hmm. and like scary. And
that's awesome.
We've dealt with a lot of loss in our house, like in family and friends and things. And it's just one of those things where it's like,
it happens.
There's no question about it. And then I worked in birth, and then I went to the CI. And I remember one of the first questions I asked on orientation was like, am I going to get to see a patient die like on orientation? And they were like, no.
On orientation?
No.
Bridget? No, not today.
I was like, how am I going to learn like what to do? Like, I was terrified.
Yeah.
I was like, they were like, well, when it happens, like it's going to happen. And I remember one of the first patients I had that I had taken care of for months was on the road to dying. And I remember like listening to all the conversations and being the one at the bedside doing the patient care and kind of trying to figure out why everybody was so like, we're going to fix this. We're going to fix this. We're going to fix. And I was like, in my head, I'm like, am I missing something? Like,
it can't be
patient's dying.
Yeah.
Like, so I read all the notes. I talked to a whole bunch of people. And one of the senior nurses there was like, you're not crazy. Like, this is the world that we work in a pediatric environment. So like, we go by the families, we go by the doctors. Like, there's always things to be done.
Right.
But there was like a real sense of moral distress where I was like, every time I was touching this patient, I felt like I was hurting them.
Ugh.
So by the time the patient actually passed on my shift later, and I was doing care afterwards, which is like bathing the patient and talking to the family and doing whatever, I was like, I'm not hurting this patient for the first time in weeks. And it felt like a weird sense of calm. And it's not something that you do alone as a nurse. You always do things after patients pass with somebody else.
Right.
But it was like an odd sense of like finally, like we're not hurting them anymore. Like
right.
This is like where we are. And then I kind of took that into like, I ended up taking care of a lot of the chronic patients where I would just educate myself. And I read all the notes and I tried to figure out what I could do, because I couldn't fix the whole problem, but I could take care of them in a way, whether it was giving them a bath or putting a bow on them or giving an outfit for the family to smile. Like, there were things that I could do to help with my like moral distress of taking care of these patients.
Oh my God.
Wow. I just got really interested in how can I make these patients comfortable. I worked a lot with the palliative care team, which is how I got into hospice in the first place. Like I kind of fell into it. Like,
right.
It wasn't really, nobody has ever.
What is palliative care?
Palliative care is comfort-based care without that prognosis of 6 months or less. Hospice is like a prognosis of 6 months or less. Palliative care is just you have a lot of chronic issues. You have a lot of things going on. Like, how can we manage your pain, your like exhaustion, like different symptoms so that you can live life in the best way that you're like able to right. with everything that you have going on. It's somebody that takes a look at your big picture.
Right.
And so, okay, so you want to, you have cancer, you have, you know, osteoarthritis, you have all these things, but your biggest issue is that you're in so much pain that you can't even go to your kid's soccer game. It's like, how do we manage that pain? Mm-hmm. We're not going to fix the problem, but how do we manage your overall quality of life to get you to do the things that you want to do?
So that's what you mean by, like, death isn't the worst thing.
No.
Like, living like that living sometimes like that is worse.
Way worse.
Does that make sense to you?
Oh, that makes sense to me.
So does that make death a little bit less scary? Or
no.
Is it just the finality of death that scares you?
Yes. I don't like the process. Like, for me, I'm getting...
Have you been through it?
I'm getting murdered. So, like, I don't like the process of death.
Oh, my God.
Like, this morning, I went for a run. Yes, I run on Tuesdays. It's not a secret. I run, okay? I sent a video because everyone's like, why do you run?
Nobody cares.
So I'm just saying, I sent a video to Andrew as I was running through Scary Alley saying, just so everybody, so you know, here's where I am if I don't come out of this alley alive.
Why would you go down the alley then?
Because that's the only way out. So I sent him a video of myself running through Scary Alley being like, this is where I am. It's 7 a.m. And if you don't hear from me again and I'm not home in 30 minutes, this is where I died.
It's 7 a.m.
But I was also whispering because I didn't want to wake up any people that might be sleeping and ready to pounce and kill me. So it was a whole video. So that's like, I know that I'm getting murdered.
None of this is logical.
So I'm not. So I am scared of the. it is logical. He wrote back and said, I can't tell you what he said.
Oh my gosh.
Anyway, so I'm scared of the finality of it, that I won't see anybody again and I don't know what comes next, except that I gotcha. Will haunt the SHIT out of this one.
Nothing that you just said actually is rational, except for the haunting part, which I'm bring it on. I'm very excited about that. You're not upset with death. You're upset with what happens after. If you had more of a faith of what happens after,
mm-hmm.
death wouldn't be so scary. Do you have a faith of what happens after?
I just believe that there's something out there that's better than the body that's failing that the person is currently living in.
Yes.
So murder yeah. is traumatic no matter what. Like, that's just like,
this is bullshit.
There's different types of death. There's like the traumatic deaths. There's deaths that are unexpected. There's yeah. deaths that are like very chaotic. And then there's a body knows how to die. So when yeah. a body is failing or a body is sick, the same way that like a mom knows how to give birth intrinsically, the body knows how to shut down and die. And towards the end of people's lives where they're talking to dead relatives and different people, and like I see all these things, they're kind of stuck in that in between. It makes me know that there's like something else out there.
Go back now. Go back. You see that?
Yeah.
Hold on.
Go back.
But you believe that.
I do.
So do I. So why is that scary if you know that it's not over?
Because I like this life. So like, I don't know what's next. And you know, I'm a creature of habit. I like what I know and I don't know.
But what if this is the struggle and what's coming is so much calmer, peaceful, easier, happier?
Bridget, tell us what you know. Tell us everything you know.
Well, you've seen the in-between.
I've seen the in-between. I've seen patients in various things. And my own mortality scares me.
Oh, too. It does.
It's you not are like, own. I can't say that I'm going to get to the end of my life and be like, oh, hospice. Oh, actively dying.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah,
things
yeah.
like terrifying. Right. 100%. Who knows what's going to happen?
That's human. I think that's
and
the
that's
human
experience. And, you know, my job is very different from the people in my life that are close to me as well. It's a different kind of grief. I've had
right.
patients pass, multiple patients pass, and dealing with families and dealing with different things. I've also had cousins die. I've had uncles die. I've had people that are close to me in my life and that are going through struggles where I know that they're going to die and kind of helping them with that. And it feels totally different.
Because you're connected to them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not like my job is like over here and like the people in my life, like all the time, terrified.
Yeah.
People are going to die.
Well, that makes sense. Like you...
She feels better that you are scared of it too.
No. What do you see right before they die? Do they see loved ones? Because that's what I always think, like, when I die, like, I hope, you know,
yeah.
my mom's there, you know, or my dad is there. You know what I mean?
people, they talk to loved ones. They talk about, you know, sitting. I've seen patients talk about sitting at the coffee table with their mom, like afterwards, like different things, like patients that are like in their 90s, like, and you hear like, and a lot of my time there is like talking to families and convincing them that like, that's okay. They're kind of stuck in this in between place.
Cause they're probably confused of what's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's kind of one of the major things that you can physically see or hear.
Right.
Hearing them talk about, you know, different pieces, or, you know, they kind of, there's like a, this rally that happens a lot of times before people die where they've been unconscious for like days, or they're close to it, or they're restless. And then one day they're like speaking clearly, or they eat a full meal for the first time in weeks. And the families, you know, are also confused by that. And I'm like, they're really like, this is like their, this could either be their final burst, or they are getting a little bit better before they go back downhill.
Yeah. I've heard about that.
Yeah, it's like just one of those, like, and I always preface everything with like, if I knew the exact date, if I knew what was going to happen, like I'd be paid a lot more money. Like, I'm not
right.
God, I'm not whatever your version of that is. I can only tell you what I know based on the clinical picture that I'm seeing.
That is incredible, Bridget.
But there's some spiritual things that happen in the medical sense of death, and is what you're saying.
That's where like, I've always been like a little bit east meets west. Like I love being, you know, in the ICU. I loved all the medicines. I loved bringing people back. I saw real miracles happen there as well, and keeping people alive. And the yoga trainings, the meditation, the Reiki, like the more holistic piece of it that a lot of people in Western medicine don't necessarily love. I also love that, to kind of see, take care of the whole person, and kind of see like big picture what's going on.
When you said that people rally, it reminds me of when our grandpa died, and he was at, like, they sent him home from the hospital because they knew he wasn't long. And we, all nine of us, except Billy, he didn't live here, all the cousins and the three daughters were around him, and he had been unconscious for so long. And then all of a sudden was able to not talk, but he was able to like look and see who was there. We all got to say goodbye. And then, like, but he hadn't opened his eyes in a week or something, you know?
I've also seen people wait for somebody to show up.
Really?
Sure. Like, I look at them every day and I'm like, what are you still doing here? Like, there's some sort of something that's keeping people here, whether it's families that, like, their loved ones are unprepared, or they're waiting for that cousin to fly in from California, or they're waiting for something. Because I'm like, there is no physical way that they should still be there. And then like within hours of whatever they need to happen, like then they pass. And I'm like, okay, they were just waiting for that like person.
And I think that's because you hear that a lot too. And people are always stunned by it. And they're like, it was wild. It was a miracle. It was whatever it was. But I think that spiritual part of it is what makes it not so scary to me.
Yeah.
Even though if I think about a specific person in my circle, I don't want to think about that.
Right.
So there, I mean, of course, but I can talk about it like a logical human.
Well, what I'm going to need you to do is stay far away until I've lived the rest of my life. And then you can come back and be the last person, because I'll wait for you.
Finally, so if you can, I can leave.
No, you have to stay away so that I have to wait for you to say goodbye. Be the last person.
Should I move now?
So I can.
Can I do it right now?
So I can have more time. Okay.
Am I death?
Yeah.
Are you telling me that I am death?
Knock, knock, knocking on. Oh, that's heaven's door, not death's door. Never mind. Never mind. What is interesting? Shut it. I'm going to be serious for a second. You know I like making uncomfortable situations awkward.
No one's uncomfortable but you, first of all.
What's interesting to me is that you could do birth and death.
Yeah.
They're very different.
They all come from the same place.
But that is so different. It's like the happiest moment. Everyone's so happy. A new life has come. And then the other one is like so sad.
But sometimes it's not.
But sometimes it's not.
That's what she's saying, is like sometimes it's relief, not grief.
Yeah.
Yes, there's always grief attached. You tell me if I'm wrong, but there's always grief attached, especially the families. And if you're someone taking care of a patient, even if you're not related to them, like you were in charge of that patient for however long. Like there's a connection there too. But it's a relief that they're not in pain. You hear it all the time.
Unless
God, they're not in pain anymore.
Unless it's a tragedy.
Unless it's a tragedy.
Unless it's a tragic, unexpected death, which is always chaotic.
There's different versions of everything, Carly, just like life. happiness comes in different bottles as well.
I'm also a little bit different in nursing in that I like the lifespan. I love learning about people. I love learning new roles. I love learning new. So not everybody is going to jump from maternity to hospice. Yeah. Like that's just simply not, or well babies to sick babies or like whatever. Like I just really enjoy. One of the reasons I became a nurse, I've wanted to be a nurse since I was in like fifth grade, is that my neighbor was a nurse and she worked, you know, I think like weekends in the NICU or something, but she was always around. And whenever anything happened, it was like, go over to that house. Like, yep. I like to be able to kind of know a little bit about a lot of things so that when people talk to me, it's like not as it's kind of like, oh, I have like a little bit of this or I can look into that or like what I like to just kind of be somebody that people can come to no matter what. So in knowing and working in all of the different lifespans, it's like I feel like that just opens so many doors in terms of getting to know other people and talking about the things that are uncomfortable and feeling like closer relationships because people are like, oh, can I run this by you? And I'm like, yeah, sure, whatever.
So you're very different people.
Well,
you're very, very opposite.
I want to know a lot about one thing so that you can only ask me questions about that one thing and I don't know anything else. So go to Bridget for everything else. Justin's off my short list. You're on my short list, top of the list, because every time I ask Justin, he goes, you're fine. You're fine. So I'm going to text you now.
She's going to also tell you that you're fine. Or my other thing is go to your doctor because I don't know. I can give you a little bit about what I do know or I've seen, but my always answer question, like you guys say on the podcast too, is like, go see your doctor.
Yeah. Go see your doctor.
Always. Yeah. Always. That's so funny.
Well, whatever. I'll just have all the nurses tell me I'm fine.
Because you're fine. Oh my God.
There's at least three or four in any given class at CFIT. So I know. That's fine.
Thank God. Yeah. I always look around and I'm like, okay, we got one, we got two, we got three. Okay, class can go forward.
Yeah. I'm CPR certified, but you don't want me doing it. You want someone who knows what they're
weirdly,
doing.
That was my shtick. In the CICU. That was my favorite role to have in a code.
In a code?
You're the CPR girl?
Wait, so when we did our episode about what songs you should play for the CPR, were we on target?
Baby shark, do.
I literally at one point had a doctor come up to me, like next to me, like he's like bagging the patient and he was singing Staying Alive as I'm doing the...
No way! Yeah. Were you good at it?
I was good at it.
She's the CPR girl!
And part of that's my strength and breathing and different things to be able to go like, into doing it.
Yeah.
But there's a couple of different roles. You can be like the med nurse. You can be the recorder, which is my least favorite job because I hated keeping track of anything. CPR I could do.
That is crazy.
Yeah, that's a lot.
I've known Bridget almost her whole life. I am learning so many things about Bridget. I think I know Bridget. I don't know Bridget.
No.
I do not know you. Because I am learning so many things.
You are fascinating. You are fascinating and you're so young, so I can only imagine what more you're going to learn and do and all the avenues you're going to go through.
Well, I was telling Christy, I was having dinner with her on Saturday night and we're talking and we're both like, we're not good at small talk. And then I was talking to Christy and Sam and they were like, I was like, I just am not great at parties or like social gatherings because like people ask me about my job or like what I'm interested in. And I'm like, it's kind of a conversation killer.
Stopper.
Well, full stop.
That is so interesting because I'd like to know what career is good at parties. Because I was just saying to, I don't know if I was saying it to you or Andrew, that our career isn't good at parties either.
It's always me.
Yeah. But I would agree. But see, to me, going up to you and being like, how's your work? That's interesting to me.
Well, it's always interesting to anybody else.
Yeah.
Then
anybody else, whatever you're doing.
There was a particular Christmas where I had a really bad shift and it was Christmas Eve and my parents have a big Christmas Eve party. And I remember like texting my mom and being like, everybody's going to ask where I am. Like, please tell them, like, don't ask what happened today. I got home and everybody was like, oh, I heard you had a bad shift.
Oh, God.
What happened? And I was like,
shut it.
I was like, we're just not doing this. But yeah, it's one of those two where it's like, it used to be such an interesting piece, like living with my parents and them being like, why don't you want to talk after work? Like what's going on, whatever. And I'm like, if I want to talk after work, I will tell you, I will be so excited about the little things that my patient has done all day. If I don't want to talk after work, like I probably wouldn't ask me about it.
Yeah.
It's one of those.
That's a really good gauge.
So one, this is like, I'm not calling it a guilty pleasure because it's not, but sometimes when I want to feel something, that's not about my kids, because like I will cry at the drop of a hat if it's about the kids or whatever. I watch on Instagram reels like honor walks. It is so heartbreaking.
What is that?
An honor walk?
Yes.
Bridget, what's an honor walk?
So that happens more in the general pediatric ICU than the cardiac ICU, only because in cardiac, a lot of other organs are failing as well. But it's a patient's, they keep a patient alive even if they're considered brain death. And I guess occasionally like cardiac death, to go to the ICU to go to the OR to donate their organs.
Yeah. And
so it's the final, everybody lines up and they're like, clap it. Like, it's an honor and it's a blessing for this family to make this choice, whether it's for an adult or for a child. Meanwhile, in the cardiac ICU, I'm on the other end of that, where I took care of patients that got heart and lung transplants. And there's only one way you can get a heart or a lung transplant.
Right.
Right.
Especially in a pediatric age.
Oh my God.
So yeah, we would get the other end and we would see the other piece of it. But the honor walk, yes, when you...
Nurses line up on me in the hallway.
Whoever's there. Yeah.
Yeah. They come out and they wheel the child with the family behind them or next to them, and they're clapping. Or it's so sad that they're like putting their head down, but like,
yeah,
it's their last honor as they go donate to keep somebody else alive.
I mean, there's no word to describe, like, fantastic and amazing and wonderful. It doesn't describe that, but I couldn't even watch that on Instagram.
So
I'm like already going to cry, and I don't even know what you're talking about.
Oh, that's what and military homecomings. Very different.
They also make me cry on the socials.
Like, I'm not a military person,
no,
but at all. But like watching them come home and surprise their kids when they've been away for a year, I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah. And it's funny because people are like, and I think some of what I'm not super great at management, I've learned, is that I really need to care about what I'm doing. And the healthcare system in and of itself, I've been in a lot of roles, I've been in a lot of things. The healthcare system is broken and I can't necessarily fix the bigger pieces of the healthcare system. So I don't really want to cater to the money and the power and all that things. Like, I'd rather just take care of patients.
Right. Yeah.
And I really need to care about what I'm doing, and I really need to feel like I'm making a difference, even when it's emotionally draining or I'm exhausted or I need time to recover. Like, it's something that I'm just like, I've been in a lot of different roles, and I try to be one of those people that I'm like, I don't need to care about work. I don't need a job that makes me like dig myself in, but I just can't picture doing.
But what a gift that you found that out, right? And I don't necessarily think it's like you're not, whatever you just said, you're not good at managerial roles or management positions. I think you're that good at dealing with people and patients, and your purpose is to help and heal. Like, you're a healer.
Yeah.
Do you have just a piece of advice or something that you take with you, or anything about dealing with death or loss or grief with everything that you've gone through for anybody?
You just have to feel your grief. Like, there is just no, don't shove it down. Don't hide it. Don't hide it from your friends, because you think they're not going to hear it or feel it or take the time to yourself, because it's there and it's heavy and it starts and it's comes into every piece of your life, losing somebody, whether it's a patient or whether it's, I had a friend who recently lost her mom, like, and she's going through it. And it's like, I don't care if I don't talk to you for 6 months and we send each other memes on the internet, or you do whatever, or you don't feel like answering or whatever, just doing what you have to do to kind of make it through. And whether that turns into a point where it becomes like more clinical, where it's like, go to therapy or maybe you need meds or something, but like, it's something that's unimaginable to most people. Like, I just think that we as a society, it's like you get a couple of days of bereavement leave, or a week if it's a parent, or like things like that. And it's like, that is simply not
how it works.
Yeah. So like, I mean, I know as a culture, we all have to work. We all have to continue living. And if you have kids or pets or whatever, figuring out, but allowing yourself to just be in the space of like complete and utter grief.
Yeah.
Because that's all I can say. It's like, you have to feel it. Because if you don't, then again, things start to take a tumble.
Yeah. Brilliant. I agree that I will work on that.
You can't
Carly,
agree
that involves feelings.
That's why I watch honor walks. To make sure I still have them.
Oh my God.
No. I tend to keep a lot of things inside until they waterfall.
It's so fun.
But I would be that person. Like, I could never do what you do where I would, you know what I mean? Like,
people are meant to be in the roles that they're in. I say that about most nurses that I've met because I know them. I can't say it for everybody.
I also love teaching new nurses.
You do?
I do. There was a point where I was burnt out from like precepting new nurses, but I love teaching new nurses about death, about caring for patients in ways that aren't medical, about feeling their own feelings. And I think like I used to share a lot more like writing and different things, and I would have the new nurses come up and say, thank you for talking about your anxiety or your depression or whatever, because I feel like this job is insane and everybody here is robots and like I don't know what's going on. And it's like, and I think that's becoming more of a thing, especially since the pandemic. There's organizations out there for healthcare worker mental health in terms of dealing with these like entirely stressful situations. But that was always something that was important to me, was to be able to talk to them and be like, you're not crazy. Just like somebody told me that I wasn't crazy.
Right.
When I was thinking about this patient, where there are a lot of people that are very unemotional, and there are moments when you're in crisis situations at work where you literally just have to be like,
yeah,
flat and just get through it. And there are times where I've taken care of this patient for 6 months. They tell you not to cry when the patient dies, and I cry and I hug the family. And like, I'm like, no, human. Like we are.
You're human.
We're human. Like, you can't spend your entire shift just like crying as you're like walking around. Like, that's. But you are allowed to show emotion and you are allowed to, you've worked with these people for so long and you get to know the families and you get to know the different things. And it's like, you're allowed to cry and you're allowed to feel things. And it's not, it doesn't make you a bad nurse. It doesn't make you a bad person. It just makes you a human. And a lot of times they take a lot of humanity out of healthcare because you're supposed to just go on and go pick up the next patient afterwards.
Well, thank God for you, Bridget, because you are, I think, going to make, if you haven't already, made an impact with a lot of nurses specifically in that regard, because it does. Sometimes they do feel robotic. And the more you're in it, like the more years you're in it, I like you can just tell that like, oh, they've been doing this for a long time. Like things don't affect them. And that's not true. I'm sure it affects them, but it's like what you do, Carly. What? Let them like bury and burrow. And then, you know, it becomes a different callus in your heart and your soul. So
yeah,
thank God for you.
That's why. So when I left the bedside last year to go to primary care,
I hate her.
I had to, that was more of a, I need to figure out my brain and I need a less stressful job to figure out my brain and figure out what I want and what I want to do next. Because I knew there was a point where I was so jaded and so burnt out. And I was like, this is not how I want to be when I'm at work, but I don't know how to fix it. So like, you're allowed to, the cool thing about nursing or healthcare is that you can switch and you can do other things that are like less stressful, or like taking the time to take care of yourself in other ways. And then like, if you need to, you can always go back. Like, you kind of bounce around. But I never wanted to be a person at work that hated going to work every day. Like, I was like, we have a really big job. We need to take care of these patients. And if I'm not feeling it, then it's time to go.
But you're just very self-aware. And I don't think that's,
it's a lot of therapy.
Normal. How about it?
Listen, I had Bridget on day one with the birthing plan, and Bridget was there. I would be happy to have Bridget on the last day with my family.
Wow, that's big.
Listen,
that's big.
Because what would you rather? A nurse that is also upset of whoever's passing, like a family member or you, or somebody that has no emotion?
Yeah.
And it's just another day of work for them. But it is the biggest thing in your life.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I would choose Bridget any day of the week.
Sure.
On that note,
now we're going to play a game.
Because I love to make things uncomfortable. I really want to make Bridget uncomfortable if she isn't already. But I feel like she's not, because she deals with situations on the daily. We're going to play a little game called A Moment of Pause with B Claws. Okay? We're going to take a moment and we're going to play Would You Rather.
Okay.
Rapid fire. Only Bridget.
Oh.
Yeah, it's only Bridget.
You're fine.
All right. Okay, it's only B Claws. I'm going to give you two options. You pick one.
Okay.
And it's rapid fire. No thinking.
Okay.
Okay. A Moment of Pause with B Claws. Sorry, I had to say it again because I was so proud of myself.
Yeah.
Okay. Peanut butter, crunchy or smooth?
Crunchy.
Yes. Movies or TV shows?
TV shows.
Coffee, iced or hot?
Iced. Till I die.
Yeah. Winter or summer?
Summer.
Rain or snow?
Rain.
Build a snowman or sandcastles?
Sandcastles.
Yeah, you're a beach girl. Grow flowers or carve pumpkins?
Carve pumpkins. I kill every plant I have.
Samesies. TikTok or IG? Reels.
Oh, TikTok.
Oh, my God. Memes or GIFs?
Memes.
Send TikToks or receive TikToks?
Both. That's hard. That is hard.
Have Mondays off or Fridays off?
Mondays.
Sleep in and work late or get up early and get off early?
I'm up at 5:30 every day.
Yeah. We figured that out. Visit the past or go to the future? I know. That was a deep one.
That's a hard one.
How dare you?
She doesn't like small talk, so I got into it.
I'm going to say visit the past because I'm missing people.
Oh!
I like that. Breathe underwater, just so everybody understands, or fly?
Breathe underwater.
Pause time or rewind?
Pause.
Yes! Right, because we're taking a moment of pause for B-Claws. Yeah. Early bird or night owl?
Early bird.
Camping or glamping?
Neither.
Sleep or eat?
Sleep.
Friday night or Sunday morning?
Friday night.
Really?
Sunday morning, I get the Sunday scaries.
Yeah, we all do.
Friday night, you just have the whole weekend to like exist.
I agree. Sleep with sounds or silence?
Silence.
Sleep with a nightlight or complete darkness?
Complete darkness.
Carly alive or dead haunting you?
Alive. Although I think haunting me would also be fun.
Yeah, I'd be wearing this. So
she's in a flannel.
I'm in a flannel. So is B Claws. So
my favorite tattoo is like Beetlejuice that I have. Like it's like a dumb because I love Lydia Deetz.
And yes,
it's, she's my inner gothy teen, but also like that whole haunting Beetlejuice, like the underworld, and
you like all that.
I love all
that. Yeah, so I'll come haunt you. This is not a question, but how many tattoos do you have?
Somewhere between 10 and 20.
Oh, that's a big gap, Bridge. All right. Ready? Last question. Carly or Victoria? You must pick.
I'm going to do what most people do, and I'm going to go with Carmella.
Good choice.
Guess what, B-Claws? You won! Did you think you wouldn't?
Did not.
Did not.
I like that a lot of those questions were the same, but in different ways. Very good game. Well, thank you, Bridget, for hopefully enlightening you.
I learned so much.
I learned so much, too. But I'm okay with it a little bit more than you are.
Well, you didn't like the honor walk.
I don't like the honor walk.
But that's
death.
I don't
think anybody likes the honor walk. I think that's...
No, I don't like it. But I was very surprised that you would get emotional over that when you can talk about death till the cows come home.
Yes, but... I empathetically can put myself there thinking about it, and the emotion is so high that I don't want to think about it.
Yeah. So don't watch the Instagram reels of it.
I won't, but if they pop up now, I'll kill you.
Where's your phone? Is it listening?
It's right there. But no, thank you. I think you have such a good perspective due to all of your different career paths and also like your own internal research that you like to do. I mean, you're a nurse and a yoga teacher, and just like you said, medical field and the spiritual world, they're like usually not one and the same, but you are somehow making it very natural and normal, and I think we need more people like you, especially in hospitals. 100%.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate you invite me on.
Listen, I just said I knew you, but I did not know you. Like, you know what I mean? Like, It's so interesting to really get
to talk to people.
Yeah, because when do we talk like this, Bridge? When I'm yelling at you in class? Like, I'm not going to be like, yeah, Bridge, how was work today? Get lower. You know, we don't have time to talk like this. So it's really interesting to get inside your brain.
Well, one of the first times you said on the podcast that you didn't like death, she DM'd.
Oh, yeah.
To be real, I was like, do you ever want to talk about it?
Well, you had talked about death cafes and how people can talk about and do things. It's like, squad, I got you. We're fine. We're good. We're good.
You do. If you ever need someone to talk to when she is fully recovered from her days and her, you know, emotions and coming out of therapy and all the things, then Bridget is a great person to talk to for that. But thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
Love it.
Just remember, we're gonna cut you off. I feel like your haunting ghost is just like, hey guys, it's Carly. Like in everyone's ear.
Have you ever seen that meme that's like, why doesn't anybody haunt in like outfits like I'm wearing right now, a t-shirt and flannel? They're always in Renaissance clothing or some 1800s. I'm gonna haunt you in a C-fit tank top and leggings.
That's haunting.
Tank top, though?
No, it won't be a full tank top. It'll be half of a tank top. That's how you'll know it's me.
And remember, you are always fit to be real.
And always allowed to be a little extra.
Afterthoughts with B Claws. Have your wishes written down. Please, it makes life for everybody else so much easier. And if you are anybody's power of attorney or have any type of paperwork as your loved ones get older, have 17 copies on your desk at all times because you will need to give them to people and nobody can ever seem to find them.
Brilliant.
That's it.
For legal reasons, we have to tell you that this podcast is meant for entertainment and educational purposes only. We are not healthcare professionals. For all of your health, wellness, fitness, and self-care needs, please refer to the medical professional in your life, your primary care physician, your therapist, a certified coach, whoever it may be. And then let us know what they say, because I guarantee we need to know it too. Okay? Okay, bye.